You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. You feel so free listening to this type of radio because it is free of commercials. I think that's what the freedom is. The freedom from being consistently manipulated towards profit. That's the freedom tonight. And it is on that theme that I am standing in a free space watching my son play with these little people. Two of them are five and one is six. He's four. How old is she? The girl asked. He's wearing a skirt, bright pink. You know, I'm in New York, near the hospitals. Bright pink and metallic with a puffy blue jacket, which happens to be the same brand as another kid's jacket. So they have a brand identity among them. They could, maybe even three of them have the same brand jacket. We lament the communist uniform sometimes of Mao, but the jeans, t-shirt uniform, like, I mean, it takes a couple different forms depending on if like you're in the West or the urban skinny jeans or, but you know, we have our own uniforms. Anyway, these guys are a little bit uniformed out. They're all wearing jeans, except Keats is wearing corduroys and yeah, puffy jackets of the North Face. We got ours from the neighbor downstairs. So it was free, also free. And tonight there is a party that is not free. But the money goes to Bernie Sanders, who's running, he's trying to run like a free campaign, free of enormous commercial interest, commercial free. And I was just thinking about how, you know, we live in such a complicated type of world, but there are, every now and then there are these laser-like points that slide through and can be like a guide or like a tool to cut away things, like if you're throwing a pot on a wheel in the high school pottery class and the teacher smiles when you put on your smock that you leave in the school because you are so messy with the clay. But she's okay with that because you've, you know, often the pottery teacher's like a very somehow clean person. You always wonder why, because they're dealing with dirt and mud and stuff. Wow, these guys are going for a real race. Keats is doing pretty well, even though he's four. He's sort of in last. He's sort of limping. Oh, he cut the corner to go. He's now in third place. He cut the corner. He was in fourth. The guy tried to push him out. Now he's a rules lawyer. He's called everyone to a stop. He's pushing Keats. And he pushed him to the back. Now he's not letting him run. The other two children have rounded the second corner. And the guy who is in, you know, the two slow guys, Keats and this other boy, are now standing in the other corner, and the other two are still running. And the girl introduced, when she introduced the boy, she introduced him as the fastest boy in their group. And it reminded me of, you know, like, trying to impress girls, or trying to impress whoever you want to impress, other boys or other girls or whoever it is. Because I think we all try to impress in different ways, different groups. But I specifically remember in elementary school trying to impress girls around the idea of running. Because at that age, girls can be really a lot faster than boys. They're kind of like bigger, faster, stronger. And at least that's my memory. And I remember Gretchen, I think was her name, was so much faster than I was. She had really, really straight, long hair. She was really nice. She gave me a birthday present even though it wasn't my birthday. And I said every day at school, today's my birthday. And one day she gave me a present, Lone Ranger book, which was like, I thought, the coolest book. It was based on some TV show, maybe. It was photos of the Lone Ranger getting massacred. In the massacre, like, he's the Lone Ranger because all the other ones were killed somehow. I don't remember how they were killed. Maybe they're killed by the Native Americans. And then one of them turns coat and decides to go with him. Maybe that's how Tonto comes about, or has a change of heart or something like that. And then maybe they go on a vengeful spree, but I remember him fighting like cowboys in black outfits, black hats and black dungaroos or whatever. The shadow cowboys. And he was he had the white hat of the sun. Light versus dark again. That theme. But you gotta wonder where that came from. Because the dark is so nice. So nice to close your eyes and just feel things and imagine them. There's so many different value systems to give to colors. You know, you could just flip it around. It could be the opposite. It could be that the dark is safety and, like, succor and strength, you know? And the light is weakness and fear and all this stuff. I mean, depending on who you are, it could go either way and how you are, how you identify with those. So, the freedom from needing to represent something is also a great freedom. Like on the radio, it's nice. You have the freedom from having to represent your visual self. Then you're limited to your audible or oral self, I guess. Aural self. But you're free of all the other things, potentially. I mean, your voice has a lot of markers of you. You can sometimes tell, like, the size of a person and where they're from and something, maybe even about their ethnicity or maybe even their religion, maybe can be in their voice or the, like, phrases they use, things like that. So we can still give ourselves identity, and it can be marked by these demographics. Freedom from demographics, though, is what I was really thinking about, because lately I've gotten so into this election stuff because it's so relevant. Maybe for the first time, not the first time in my life, but, like, It's more relevant than at almost any other time in my life. It feels like the kinds of things that are coming up are the kinds of things that are wrong with our country across the spectrum. Like, and you have the things that are really bad about our country. And I think, and I think both sides think that. Like, if you're on the T side, you might think that. And if you're on the B side or BC side even, maybe, I don't know. You might think, you know, you might just flop what's good and what's bad. But actually, there's so much consensus in America about certain issues. Like, I think both of the populist candidates in some way are running on the with the idea that there's something wrong with America and like, where we are right now, the way things are going. We need to make that better. You know, like, Trump's slogan is Make America Great Again. And I think, you know, and maybe Clinton says, don't mess up America. And Bernie's is like, well, let's do what we intended to do with this country instead of giving it over to corporate interests and the moneyed elite. You know, let's make it a democracy again. So it's kind of great because the populist streak is trying to address, like, these super fundamental things. And in the most, I think, exciting rhetoric that's been used before, like, excitingly horrible and excitingly great. And we have all that to deal with. Usually the politics is so careful and it's timid, and you really have no idea what it means exactly. Like, what does even the sentence mean that the person's saying? But now people are saying fairly clear sentences, and they're horrifying and they're emboldening, you know, depending on who you hear. So, I was looking, I read all these articles, I stayed up so late. This happens sometimes, right? Nowadays, more than it used to. We stay up late at night, like, even in a bed, on a phone or whatever, a device, reading articles to educate ourselves. And we might be trying to figure out, like, oh, I have a theory about this election. I have my prediction. And I'm going to see if it comes true. And I remember when Obama was running the first time, and it was around my birthday in February. And that's around the time the Super Bowl was also played, it turns out. Which I'd never made that association before that year, actually. But so it was his first time running for president. And he was still in the primary with Hillary, and nobody that I knew really thought that he would win. But I decided before the Super Bowl started that, like, the Democrats and Obama were the Giants. They were this kind of, like, ragtag team that meant well, but, like, wouldn't necessarily all show up and play, like, didn't necessarily have, like, the skills and the machine precision of the Republicans that they were going against, who were the Patriots. Which is ironic, because the Patriots are from New England, and, you know, it's sort of the home ground of liberality as we know it, of, like, liberal thinking in general, as it is in America. Probably grew up there. Kind of mixed in with some Virginia stuff, probably. But anyway, that aside, the team itself had the kind of, like, Republican feel to it a little bit. I mean, I think this was before the controversy of, like, waiting the ball and stuff, which is, you know, the Democrats have cheated too. Like, yeah, Kennedy probably had dead people vote for him, things like that. But anyway, I decided that the Giants were Obama, the Patriots were, gosh, who was he running against? Somebody. I mean, he's running against Hillary, but then there was another, maybe it ended up being McCain? Yeah, it ended up being McCain, who, you know, I liked a lot. I mean, for a Republican, he was kind of great. I liked him a lot. He's like a POW, you know, he was like a guy who seemed like a real person, really cared about people. He was from a weird state. I mean, look at how bizarre Arizona is now. It's like, so scary. It's like the last gasp of a frustrated generation, you know? And the median age is like 65. You start to get some really crazy ideas that are sort of out of touch. And you got to wonder, like, oh my gosh, will that happen to me? You know, you got to try to stay young in your thinking, I think, if you want to keep going with the world. But then, you know, it was youth power that like, brought Hitler into power, too. Just depends on which way you direct it. That's why it's so nice to have somebody like Bernie Sanders running. It's a very positive, inclusive, peaceful type of direction, rather than, like, the type of direction, like, authoritarian direction from Trump, for example. But anyway, story within a story, an idea within an idea, a capsule inside another, in a ship, in a bottle under the sea, with now the children running on the top of their playground thing. I'm counting, there's like 7 different levels here that you can be on, running around. But it's mostly a way of getting from place to place and finding each other. My son was unwilling to wear clothes outside. He wanted to go out in his t-shirt. It's like 30 degrees. But I got him to wear the puffy jacket and a hat even, which he's been pulling over his eyes to be Boba Fett. He cannot see when it's over his eyes. And he carries a stick too, you know, in that situation. Which at least the eyes are protected by the thing. The sticks aren't that sharp, this particular one's. It's not going that fast, just walking. I have the stick now, so don't worry. A lot of people can get worried about that kind of stuff. And the fear, that little type of fear, that tiny fear of something that you love being hurt and destroyed, that is the fear that gets played with in these kinds of political moments and distorted and twisted. So, but when you're watching like a football contest, sports contest, you may not have that fear, at least in the same way. I mean, some people have that wrenching fear and they stand up and scream and all that. You know, you go through an emotional turmoil when you see your team getting beaten or coming back or whatever. And that Super Bowl, I don't know, you know, as a not much of a sports watcher, but it was a gripping event if you decided to pick a team and, like, root for them. And, I don't know, for people who saw it, like, there was a moment when they were kind of losing. I mean, the Giants pretty decisively were losing most of the game, I think. And then there was some amazing catch. They had to make, like, every catch going down the field at one point. And this guy made this amazing catch. He was, I feel like, and, you know, your memory changes the reality of things. So this probably isn't true. But I feel like he was the Giant who had a different position entirely, and he caught the ball with his helmet. It's like one hand pushing the ball against his helmet. It's just like they all believed so much that it had to happen for them, and that it was like time for this to happen. Like the world needed this. It needs us to win this game. And that I thought just fit so well with Obama and his campaign and, you know, hope and all that stuff. Oh, Keats is trying to walk out of the cordon zone. We're in a fortress here, surrounded by iron bars, 8 feet tall. It's cement, the whole thing. Oh, he just said goodbye. That was so nice. And then he came back inside. And now this other boy's closing the gate. Look at that. We're all so well. See, we're all so docile and obedient anyway, even at a young age. We really have to watch out who's in charge of us. Because as much as we think like we just do our own thing anyway, I think we're really susceptible to suggestion. That's kind of what I do in my performance. It's just sort of like suggestion. So the Giants ended up winning the game amazingly. And after that moment, I was like, I had just no doubt. I just decided. Because I decided ahead of time, and then it came true. It was like a little magic you do for yourself, which I think is something I don't really do, and I kind of don't really believe in. But if you decide to believe in something, then you really just can believe in it. And so then I was just super confident about that would be the reality moving forward. And I think that that helped in some small way to influence what was going on, which was much bigger, you know, than me, but it was built on people being confident of a thing and really working to make it happen. Not just being confident and like laying back. But I had friends who, like one of my friends, he was a Republican, his parents were too, but they went door to door in Pennsylvania where they lived, in a kind of wealthy area, you know, telling people why they were voting for Obama, like people who knew them. And, which is in a way almost more brave than going door to door anonymously. I've done both as well, like raising money for different causes, as a kid especially. But yeah, looking at people you know and telling them something you think and why you think it, you know, it can be, it's like a vulnerable thing to do. I think it's also a beautiful thing to do, and it's a special thing that we can do potentially in a world where we're not persecuted for what we think and what we say. So that's the exciting thing about now, about this kind of like election time. And Facebook is such a funny forum for this type of thing, because it kind of shunts you down the road of only seeing what you like. So, you know, I hadn't liked any political stuff for quite a while, and I think I was getting slightly a variety, a little bit of Clinton, mostly Bernie, and, you know, like a lot of how outrageous Trump is stuff. You know, part of me feels the biggest way of sort of derailing his hopes is to stop talking about him. I always thought that was true of Bush when Bush was elected, and everybody was so disappointed the first time George Bush was elected. And I say everybody, I mean he was elected by 50% or whatever. But in cities, people were pretty disappointed where I was spending time. In general, they were. And he was largely ignored, although he was really celebrated in a way as a buffoon, as something to be made fun of. And I think it's funny that the Democrats' criticism of the Republican candidates, like one of the harshest criticisms can be that they're a buffoon, a moron, an idiot, that type of thing. Whereas it's perhaps that quality that makes them a popular candidate among the constituents that like them, and not because those people identify with buffoonery or something like that, but because there's not as much pretense to that. There's not maybe as much of an attempt to be something. There's a way that it seems sort of more genuine or more American. Like, the way that you talk when, like, I have a character and he just talks, you know, it's not necessarily an accent, but it's just kind of a pared down way of talking. It's like more straightforward, and just, he just says what he thinks about things and he means it, and then move on to the next. And that's that. You don't have to tell me for 45 minutes your thoughts on the election situation. I can think for myself, just give me something I can use, like a simple tool, a way to cut through it all, something I can take home and share with my family. If I have one, okay, maybe I'll try that next year. Right now, I'm still looking, not really specifically for anyone or anything, just a companion, okay, somebody for Saturday night, maybe. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Ah, she replied, look, I gotta go. I got a possible date in the 3-block radius that I put in my settings. So, freedoms. Freedoms to speak. Freedoms to listen. And it's fascinating. It is a really fascinating moment. It's a moment when the political dialogue is folding in on itself, where the very carefully crafted speech of decades is now starting to like flip over itself, where the candidate who is endorsed by this race is no longer endorsed by that race only, and you know, I feel like it's a breakdown of the demographics, that they're stopping to work. And I think that people still are trying to use them. Like, can we have these demographics still fit? Can we have all the women vote for Hillary? Can we have all of the young kids vote for Bernie, you know? But they break down. And even the trends that they are in different regions are different. You know, I mean, I think it's pretty true that he gets the majority of the young vote everywhere. Younger vote, under 40 or something. But what about Massachusetts, like, and Boston kind of swaying for Hillary? I mean, that doesn't really fit with that type of logic, you know? And then conversely, in Nevada, he had a Hispanic majority, like the majority of Hispanics who voted for him over her, who voted for a Democrat. I've always thought that the Hispanic vote, were it a single block entity type vote, which I don't think it is, would more likely be conservative leaning because of sort of family practices and religion and things like that. Except that in general, the rhetoric from the Republicans is so racist that there's just no way you can really do that. And yet, maybe people still try, kind of. It's just, we just live in such a weird, fascinating country. And then the differences in a way are subtle, like among these things. I mean, this election, it doesn't feel that way. They feel a little bit more genuinely different. But like, even you look at Trump, the horrible, hate-spewing demagogue, you know, if you want to call him that. Or like, the opportunistic guy who just wants to like have an interesting, weird life. He's like, I want to live the craziest life anyone's ever lived. I'm going to try to do that. I've got a huge head start with millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars for my family. I'm going to like make the most of this and borrow money, you know, and just like keep it going and pass wealth. And I mean, he's taken total advantage of the welfare system that we have for the wealthy. And really, you kind of, once you're at a certain number, you can sort of live forever. Like you can, in a way, you can do no wrong. I mean, George Bush was another guy who went bankrupt. Although, I mean, you know, fact check me, I guess. But I feel like he had a baseball team, or he was bankrupt, and then he tried to run a baseball team, and then it wouldn't work. And then somebody else was telling me that Trump keeps trying to buy into the NFL, but they don't want him. Something like that. I don't know. It's just funny. It's all just so funny. And here's a guy who's like, you know, he's not even a Republican, really. And then Democrat is not a Democrat. Like, Bernie Sanders is independent, or a socialist, right? A different party entirely. And I think Trump just changed the other day to be Democrat or something like that. This kind of thing. I mean, then that's the other thing that happens, is that there's this fact-checking or lack of fact or, like, you know, ways of putting things. Like, the recent primary, okay, 7-4, right? Hillary got 7, Bernie got 4. Well, one of those was a tie. Really, it came down to, like, I don't know, less than 1 percentage point at Massachusetts. So 7-4 suddenly becomes like, well, let's take one away from each of them then, because they got a tie. Or actually, but we just awarded it to Hillary, so let's take it away from her. So it's 6-4. Well, that's not such a big difference. Or instead of taking away from her, let's keep her 7, and let's give Bernie 1 as well, because they kind of divide that, so it becomes moot. So then it's 7-5. Well, that seems pretty close. 7-5. If one state switches, you're tied at 6-6. So suddenly this, like, whoa, dominant sweep on Super Tuesday, it's just a tie. Not only is it a tie, but it's a tie where the states that she's winning are states that a Democrat probably wouldn't win in a general election anyway. So they're sort of irrelevant to win. Whereas the states he's winning, except for maybe Arkansas, because she's from there. You want to go home? Okay. I think we're going to walk this way to Otis. Going to see Otis. Why? And Larkin. Because nobody's home. Mommy's not home. She's staying later at work. Why? This is Keats.
I don't want to do this.
Okay. Hey, Keats, give me one second. Let's walk together, and I'm going to finish this thought, and then we're done, okay? And I hear you. My hands are freezing cold, too. Your hands cold, too? Yeah, I feel you. I'll be able to carry you in a minute, okay? Give you a little boost. Anyway, the final, just to finish this thought. I brought noodles. I brought noodles, chicken and noodles.
Okay.
Should we sit down and eat it? Okay, let's sit down. All right, chicken and noodles. Okay, there's a lot of... Here, let's do this one, Keats. Those other benches had water and snow. This one just has a little bit of sand. That's not so bad. Okay. I made some Trader Joe's food. Food is so different from how it was under FDR.
I won't eat it.
How are you going to eat it? I have a fork. Look. Okay, so instead of a sweep now, we have an almost tie. And then, as I recall, I mean, she had a strong margin in the states that she won. I feel like except for one of them. And he also had a strong margin. Like, he had 20 points, and she had, like, from 20 to 30 points. Or more. Oh, yeah, but in... There we go. In his home state, he had a huge margin, even bigger. The biggest margin, I think, in history of somebody running for a primary or something like that. In his own state, in Vermont. So what's the point of this? Oh, I guess the point is just in how you spin it, you know? And the turnout for that vote on that Super Tuesday was lower for the Democrats than the turnout was for the prior primaries. And could it be that, you know, people were like, oh, Bernie really lost in South Carolina. He doesn't have national appeal. You know, that was kind of the argument put forward by the media, or the spin on the wind. But again, it's, you know, people are liked differently in different territories. The Republicans have a hilarious situation now where one of them needs to drop out immediately if they want to have any chance of defeating Trump. But they can't drop out because the guy who just won Oklahoma and Texas just won. So he can't drop out, even though looking forward, he probably won't win much more. And then the guy who hasn't really won much and has been constantly in, like, second or third, he's expecting his states are coming up. So he's going to stay in to get his states, and the other guy's going to stay in because he just won, and he's, like, flush with victory. And then there's one other guy who's just going to stay in just to be stubborn, which you've got to admire, like, because he's way at the bottom of the field. So then one-third of the electorate can still determine who the person is. Now, it's probable that if one of them dropped out, a substantial number of their votes would also go to Trump. Mr. T, should we call him? A Petty the Fool? I mean, Mr. T's kind of awesome. Trump's not really, but why not call him Mr. T? Like, he throws black people out of his rallies. I don't know. Maybe that's a good way. It's a zinger. Can zing him as Mr. T. And we all think Mr. T's cool. Maybe we're talking about, like, the Trump that he could be. Like, he could be this, I mean, and this is maybe a total fantasy. And not one that I have, but I'm just for the sake of imagination. That he could be this chimera who is made up of all these different parts, right? Because he has seemed to be so far. He's kind of just whatever. He'll do the deal, whatever, however he can, make himself look good. But suddenly he gets into office and he just does just a weird random collection of things. Like, I was trying to think, who would he possibly vote? Like, who would he put in the Supreme Court? And then I was like, okay, well, he would just put in sort of whoever gave him the most money. However, whatever the best deal for him was in terms of that, that's what he would do. And it could relate, you know, it could be like a Ponzi scheme. The really sad thing about Bernie, the really sad thing about the whole Madoff scandal is that that was happening on a corporate level all over the country. That's why we had to do the bailout. And yet, the only person persecuted for that is a person, is like a guy who was doing it. Some, you know, in a way, a guy whose time ran out. Like, the time ran out on all those banks, too. But he was just doing the same thing that the banks were doing. And yet we, you know, we really lionize him and we tell these personal stories of, like, these millionaires who got ripped off by him and you know, the pension funds that got ripped off by him and stuff like that. But the same thing was being done by these banks, and they were not persecuted in that same way, and, you know, none of that. So, I guess jumping forward for a second, when Obama was running, and it was amazing that he won, so amazing that, like, there were spontaneous parties throughout, like, not only our country, just throughout the world. It was like, oh my God, this is amazing, a new era is here. And then sure enough, like, that era is not really allowed to be ushered in, partly by the man himself, you know, like drone campaigning and not having an actually transparent administration and, you know. Okay, yes, and then turning away, we turned away Middle Eastern ships that were going to help, like, clean up the BP oil spill and, yeah, because they were Middle Eastern, you know, things like that. Like, we still did the horrible things that America is known to do, even with Obama. But then there were plenty of beautiful things that he did, like Supreme Court nominations, lots of district court nominations. And all right, Keats, here we go. Okay, you can grab it. You want me to grab it?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you need little gloves, or are you okay? All right.
Can you hold me, Daddy?
What's that?
Hold me.
Okay, yes. Are you feeling too cold to walk? But if you walk, you might warm up more.
No, I want to hold me.
Okay, I'll hold you. To be continued. Just putting on my gloves. It's cold outside. Anyway, what I was going to say, the point of that last, the Obama thing, was that it takes more, you know, than one person. Oh, and then his appointments were so disappointing. Like, he appointed a guy from Monsanto to the EPA or something, or... Ugh. You know, it's all very vague, right? But we kind of know what it was. And then constantly, you know, he's being undermined from his own party. They won't pass his own healthcare They have like 100 days or something, and they don't do anything. He's got both houses, and they just dawdle, you know. So, yeah, it's a funny world. It's a funny situation. He has a mandate, and his own party won't let him use it. And I think what we're seeing is that, hopefully, the unraveling of these political parties, because they seem to be quite out of touch and quite actually harmful to the process of democracy, either in creating these falsely popular candidates like Trump, in a way, by running such a broad field of people that somebody who has just a bit more of the vote is better than just like one overall stronger candidate might be. And then, you know, and then of course, when something starts to get popular, like people start to get behind it, like Chris Christie, he's like, well, I want to be popular, like I want to be important. I want to be part of what's happening in the future. Maybe I'll back up this guy. Like if he wins, it'll be a great move. If he doesn't, it's still a way forward. Like it's a populist movement. Oh, my love. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. One thing I realized about radio is it's a way of organizing thinking, taking complicated, multifaceted ideas, and presenting them in a visual way, a way that can be imagined, pictured in the mind. I'm in a black underneath bathroom with, on top, stickers, 1,000 stickers, and graffiti, all about the size of your hand. The size of your hand spread out to the size of your hand kind of bunched into a tiny fist. If you could make it into the small, small fist and then twist it. That's the graffiti everywhere. A couple of these, there's one that's four hands large. That one is almost more than that. If it gets much bigger than four hands, it's hard to tell that it's anything. The size of things is so specific to us. Everything is a relationship to the size of our hands, or the distance between our eyes, or the length from our nose to our chin. And this year, what I was talking about earlier, my thoughts on the election and having read all this stuff, and I just want to pick right up from where I was before. That's what you want in radio. You want something tight, concise, solid. You want the complexity of life simplified, brought through, brought down, brought to another level, brought to a better place. But instead, you get a potentially crazy expansion where a sentence can just continue into a new place without expecting itself to have gotten there. The unexpected sentence, these streets are run by blank. That's one of these signs here, rock and rage, fear is dead. There's a popsicle, a green popsicle with two eyeballs looking at you, made in Brooklyn with an anchor and a hammer together. It's like the hammer and sickle, but it's a hammer and anchor. Family cleaners. There's something City Bird, like a bird with a chain that says City Bird, like his name is City Bird. Lots of graffiti. Our world is just all these little moments of details. And we do a great job with dealing with it. I mean, there's so much happening. There's so many details. It's kind of so easy to fool us or get us to look in the wrong place or to confuse the issue. If somebody's trying to paint a wall one color and you just keep coming in with a little pencil even, just a little pencil and just drawing on it while they're painting, you can just wreak havoc with that wall. That's kind of what's been going on, I feel like, with our Congress. At a certain point, the decorum of civility, the kind of mutual respect that one should give one's colleagues has just been ripped and torn away through years of propaganda. I think coming out of a desperation where for years and years the Republicans had no majority, I think, in the House, or maybe not in the House for 40 years or more before Reagan, and then seldom in the Senate. And I think they had the fear, you know, of being kept out of politics for so long, and then being the minority party and just watching all this other stuff happen to the world that they didn't want to happen somehow. Part of me has trouble believing that Republicans exist in a way, like in the sense that you wouldn't want to give money to old people or children medical care or people who don't have food. It just seems almost impossible to imagine who would do that, who would not want to give money to the people, who would blame those people for being hungry. Like, who cares whose fault it is? Let's just all eat. There's enough food. It doesn't matter. You know, some people are better at doing certain things than others. Let's let some people not. And besides that, it's opportunity. It's the systemic racism. Like, what jobs are there on the corner of 149th Street and 1st Avenue. I mean, actually, I think there's a hospital in there, or like a Costco now, but, you know, it's all so relative, but it seems like the simple level. And then you have a religion that preaches tolerance, or many religions that do, tolerance and kindness and caring for mankind, and yet are a tool for militant retribution and revenge and disenfranchisement and... It's like, wow, it's just so strange. It's so complicated and so bizarre. It's our world. I'm in the bathroom. There's a dance party happening. It's time to dance. To simplify things. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. And now, we're going to have fun with a pair of sunglasses. These are sunglasses that if you want to watch a 3D movie and you don't want to see it in 3D, maybe you find it nauseating, you take two pairs of sunglasses and you can turn them into one pair of flat glasses. So the way the 3D glasses work, that aren't red and blue, but that are polarized lenses, is that they're at 90 degree angles to one another, the two types of lens. So if you put them over one another, it cancels out. I think it makes it dark and you can't see. But if you put the same type of polarization in both lenses, then I think you don't get the 3D effect anymore. It's just nice and flat. Freedom from 3D. If you wear a wig and you wear a hairnet over the wig, then you have a more convincing wig. Because who would put a hairnet over a wig? And even if you have your other hair sticking out the back, sometimes people might think it's your hair. That happened to me last night. I was wearing a pair of fishnet stockings and a swimsuit and an apron and like a frilly shirt with huge shoulder pads and sort of semi-transparent sleeves. And my costume was called Grandma Don't Care. And I was Grandma, and I didn't care. You know, I've gotten to this point in my life, I'm just gonna have fun. I'm gonna roll with it. It's gonna be, just gonna be me. I wonder what is the average age of just gonna be me? If it's like 65 or 5. I mean, maybe we go through phases of just gonna be me. An early phase and a later phase. I remember when my sister was 12, she had very sophisticated opinions about everything, and she was a vegetarian and an environmentalist, and I was her older brother, and somehow it seemed to me ridiculous that she could be these things, but I should have just supported her.
with Dad.
Who are you? You're using the force against me, aren't you? Keats is wearing my black...
Vader.
Christina's black gloves. And Yavin has me play the commander. As the commander, all kinds of fun things happen to me. Often I get killed. But usually, he's on my side. You're listening to Fun with Fritz. This is Radio Free Brooklyn. I got interrupted in my broadcast by Keats yesterday, and I sort of lost my train of thought. And in order to go back and find a train of thought, do you have to go back to this last station where you got off? Sometimes the train gets derailed in the middle. There could be a laborious process of putting the train back on the tracks, requiring other vehicles, other mental constructions, in order to build yourself back, but not the same constructions that you use to get there. Because the cool thing about a train is that once it's like a big, heavy thing that's impossible to move, but once you get it on these tracks, it just like glides along, no problem. So, the train off the track is this, yeah, emergency, this horrible situation of loss and stuckness from like smooth flow. The funny thing about being a train on a track is that you're going to a place. Sometimes you know where it is ahead of time, but you're definitely going just to that place. You may pass other exciting things along the way, and you're not going to stop and do that. So, the nice thing about losing one's train of thought is that if you crash, say in like some swampy area where there's just really no hope of putting the train back on the tracks, but if you climb the hill and you look over the dune, you see like a beautiful beach, and then further down along the way, a boat, and then across the water, not very far, like a wonderful, idyllic little village, then you could think, oh, I've escaped the prison train, and here I am in this beautiful paradise. Maybe I'll stay here for a while. So I was talking earlier about radio and how there's an attempt, or like, I feel like one of the imperatives of radio is to simplify life for us, to take away, for example, the visual component of life, and let's just, it helps us focus, let's just have one component, let's just use one thing, let's use our ears. So to pare it down and allow that focus is beautiful. It's like, yeah, it's the gift of radio. So if you do radio that jumps around, gets derailed, ends up in little oases, explores them, finds some swamps, maybe some beautiful beaches, then it could be that you're providing something new and different, some nice service. It could also be that you're missing the point of radio. You're going against its imperative. And I think it's interesting when you have a structure and in some way you rebel against it. And the way you rebel is to reject the structure. But, you know, but you're using it to reject it. Like, a lot of the political maneuvering, I feel like, that we've been experiencing, I don't know, in the last 10 or even 20 years, the highly partisan ridiculousness of, like, sequester periods and budget overrides and all this kind of stuff is, it's like people showing up to play the game but not wanting to play the game. You know, derailing the train. And when we do this in art, it can be wonderful. It can be great. It can be freeing. And you can also leave with art. You know, you can go out of the room or just not look at the thing or whatever. When you do it with a country, which wants to be maybe a train going on some tracks, and you keep derailing it constantly, even derailing it eventually just to derail it, like limiting the power of the president when the president isn't your man, and then trying to expand it when it is your man, but then thinking, maybe not thinking to the future of like, well, what, like, maybe it'll be our woman in the future, why don't we add more power to the presidency, or it'll be their woman in the future, why don't we take more away? I mean, in a way, if you destroy the structure that has created you, then It's like you're going back. You want to have a different form of transportation, maybe just horses.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to pilot the ship.
I'm Darth Vader.
I'm the robot, Zevin DeWige.
Do you want to fight?
I fight against the transmission of disease.
Do you fight over people?
I fight against mosquitoes.
No, do you fight against the other robots?
Only robots are robots. I do not see yellow or blue.
Like the other robots.
I can't tell because all I have is black and white vision.
Find the artifact we need your tongue for and then go be with your wife, you know? Go enjoy. Enjoy your life.
All right. In 10 months, my people will make a migration to this place and we'll set up a new civilization here, provided we are not impeded by the cat people who are also making a similar migration.
Yeah, I also got to warn you that there is some beaver people also living in the more watery parts.
The Schweezlers.
The Schweezlers, yeah.
That's okay, we got that under control. We don't like shiny things.
Okay, well, sounds good then.
No conflict there.
Great.
And thank you, Noble Knight, for bringing...
I don't think I'm near them at all. We're way over there. Yeah, and I'm looking for...
Oh, okay.
I'm looking for the bracelet, which I promised to bring.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah. Great. Roll your perception.
The beer, because goddammit, I lost my boat.
Whoa!
Now.
That's real good if it's perception.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You find it.
Wow. That's great.
It is... It's actually just sitting... It's like floating on the water.
Wow. All right.
It just landed fortuitously.
It's like the strawman's arm or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bracelet's still on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'll grab it.
Great. And who is the bracelet for? I forgot.
It's for the duck, like, kobold kind of guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who gave us, like, free passage. Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you brought the bracelet.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty awesome. And, Krylo, you lost your boat. And, oh, but you see your casket of, Oh, yeah, yeah. So he took the boat and he went upriver. But the Schweezers went after him.
Isn't it Schweevers?
Schweevers. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Schweevers. So you were saying something. What did you want to do?
Well, I was going to drink to the loss of my boat. But, yeah, I'm going to try and swim there and swim to it again. And swim upstream. Use that good dwarven constitution.
All right. So he's just swimming for it like a maniac.
Oh, poor bastard.
Tell me what you get. Roll a d20.
My boat.
It's at the bottom of the river.
Oh, yeah. 20.
No way.
Oh, my
amazing.
God.
Okay. So you just keep... You keep swimming and, like... You swim beyond all endurance, and you still are swimming. And you swim up to your boat, and it is almost all the way submerged. There's no mayor in it anymore. It's like over on the side. It's almost totally gone. And as you were swimming, you passed all these little Schweezers, and you just outswam them. You just, like, kept swimming. They were, like, resting, looking at sparkling things. So you beat them to the boat. And you made it to your boat, and you get there just at the last moment before it's, like, all falling under the water, going under. You haul it up. You flip it over. And lo and behold, you're right next to a pile of unused lumber with nails and a hammer right there. And a carpenter who was building a duck blind, very similar to the one that was in the other spot, except the thing about him is that he's missing his head. Someone has come and taken his head clean off, like mid work stroke. So he's just like, his head was taken off his body as he was like nailing something down.
Oh my goodness!
But all the lumber is there and the nails. What do you do?
Well, start repairing the boat.
And you repair it. It's better than ever. You can actually, I'll let you add your choice of a second story, a side boat. You know how they have like those pontoon side things? You can add a second story, a side thing, or a sail. Your choice.
I'll go with the sail.
All right. So you...
There's also some canvas near them.
Yeah, there's canvas. Exactly. There's some canvas near there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also manufacturing a ghillie suit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's wearing a ghillie suit. Yeah.
Yeah. The canvas from that.
Yeah.
They reappropriated them.
Yeah. Yeah, you just happen to find all this great stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we get word from the Schweezers. Or maybe you come triumphantly. Well, then what do you do? Do you just leave us?
I row back up to get the guys, because, I mean, we all came on my boat.
All right. So, and I think that was probably...
son of a bitch. Wrecked my boat.
And what do you say? Describe your entry back into the swampy area as we're, like, picking ourselves up off the ground.
Found my boat.
Kralo, ho. Sorry, really sorry about the boat. We had to stop the mayor, you see.
Yes. Oh, I'm so mad about my boat, I lost my common accent.
Yeah, again, really, really sorry.
Hey, Captain Kralo! Look at that, under full sail. Now you got a proper boat.
Yeah, you're the one who let that little elf. Like, oh, let's save her.
I've got a thing for elves.
It's true. It is mostly your fault.
I'll take the blame. I've got a thing for elves. Would I do it again? Hopefully not. Do I know for sure? No.
That explains the beard, then. If you're trying to attract elves, you shaved your beard like some sort of floundering willow chaser.
You think I should make my ears like more a little more pointy? Should I do medical sides like the elves have?
Listen, the only way you're getting on this boat again... Well, let's just say you're not.
No. Let's not say... I can't swim. Look, hey, you so quickly forget. I saved you from drowning.
Perhaps it's best if we part ways here.
With Kralo?
No, with you.
No, listen, guys. I made a mistake. Okay, yes.
You still seem unsure of yourself.
No, I'm just saying when it comes to elves, I have a little bit of a bias.
There could be many situations where we're all in danger with our very lives at stake.
What's that, Kevin?
I'm trying to make up some slang for someone who wants someone with an elven fetish.
They're called a willow chaser?
Willow chaser.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You call me a willow chaser?
Anyway, yeah, to be honest, it's probably best if we part ways here.
Nah, nonsense. Come on now. Hey, Maz, back me up here.
Well, I'm over on this island.
Hey, Maz, on the island.
Oi, what's up?
Are you trying to kick me out of the group?
Oh, why was you trying to kick him out of the group?
I made a mistake.
Yeah. He helped the person trying to summon the dragon and kill everyone.
But look.
Why would you do that, man?
No, but listen. It wasn't just me. There was another fellow too who thought it was a good idea. And he got eaten. It's true. But other side of it, reverse flip coin.
Man,
it,
when we left to go do this thing, our whole plan was to stop that lady.
Right, no, it was to stop her, but nobody said she was an elf, first of all. And secondly...
some sort of willow chaser.
No, hey. Okay, look. I might have a weakness for elves of a kind, right? But, listen...
The lack of beard.
I'll blame it on the lack of beard. Look what I'm dealing with here. Constant hatred from dwarves, lack of a beard. So, you know, this is how I explain it to myself. She had helped me in my dungeon, and really, I owed her one. But debt is paid.
You have a lot of problems in dungeons, don't you? Because we basically had the same situation.
That dungeon was the source of so many problems. I'm really glad to be cutting out on my own. I got my own contract, actually, with a lich.
Nice. A lich? You know, wait, why is he working with a lich?
No. He's a nice guy, Asprenthia.
You know, you're in a good place now. You have this contract with the lich. You can go work on that, and we can go on our quest.
Asprenthia, it's true. He's working with a lich.
He's working. He agreed to work with a lich.
You
it's
know,
correct.
I think you're right. You should not travel with us anymore.
I agree. However, I will say in his defense, the lich was very, very nice.
He's
never heard of a nice lich.
No, I think it's a novelty. He's also a new lich, which is maybe different.
But honestly, I can't trust him at my back ever again.
No. We're getting a little crazy here. No, I didn't attack you. I haven't attacked anybody.
You can.
What's that say again?
I just said to him, like, maybe if you point up your ears, you can trust him. Somewhat.